Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
I believe Mr. Burton is on the line now, too.
That is correct. You have summoned James, and he is here.
Thanks. Dave, John, thanks so much for inviting me. I really do appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, James said if we didn't do it, he'd beat me up. So
yeah, and James causes all kinds of damage.
Yeah, no crap.
We always respond.
An ongoing theme, if you will.
Yeah, we always respond to threats.
That's good to know. I'll keep that in mind.
I think one can get away with doing a lot of just crying. Falling to the ground, sucking your thumb. That's how I get.
You know, when you're in the right environment, that'll. Yeah.
Son of this a is gun. True.
Oh, this is going to be one of those.
Yes, I believe it is.
Isn't that making it more fun? It's not one of those, it's one of those.
That is true.
One of them there things.
All right.
So how are you guys doing?
We're doing good. I can't speak for John. I'm doing good.
Well, John's cantankerous. If he was doing good, some part of the world would fall apart in some way.
That's awesome.
I only got to yell at like only three or four kids to get off my lawn today. So it's only mediocre.
There you go.
It's good that you remember him. I mean, that's the important thing.
No matter how
remember
much
therapy. Him, I listen to you guys every single week. I feel like I'm your buddy.
Uh-oh.
Friend.
Look, all I can say is we're not paying for your therapist, all right?
Aw.
Wait, I thought we were like therapy. But...
And then when I was a little boy, my mom looked at me and said, "You're not my real son."
Oh, God, have you ever had one of those podcasts?
No, but I think I might get one.
I mean, it kind of depends. Like, if you just don't care about the person and just... You could turn it into something really funny, but in all honesty, it probably would just be a lot of uncomfortable, awkward silences.
Pretty much.
You should, like, record them and turn them into a drinking game.
Now, well,
why
I'm
do you
just...
think I've got my Jack Daniels here?
Hey, there you go.
Now, when he says ex-girlfriend one more time, that's when you take a shot. This is...
No, it's funny. My brother does a podcast called Geeksters, and they do that. They tell their audience, because my brother... They talk about video games coming out, and whenever it's a Japanese title, he always has problems pronouncing it. So they're always like, okay, guys, when he can't pronounce it, take a shot.
So, Dave, it's generic. Genetic.
Yes. So, you know what? We're not going to bother doing a formal intro. I'm going to keep all this in. For those who haven't figured it out yet, you're listening to Superhero Speak. I'm your host, Dave.
And John.
And this week, we are talking with... a returning guest, first off, artist James Burton, and he brought along his new companion and life mate, Don Smith.
Greetings. Oh, really? We got to go there?
Yes.
Stop.
Together, you guys work on a book called The Vampire of the Lost Highway.
Yes. This is Don Smith. The Vampire of the Lost Highway is a comic that I have been working on since about 2012, and it's somewhat of an anthology series. And each issue I have set in a different time period with a different artist to give that a different feel. And James has done two of the covers, and he has also done he's done issue number two, and he's also working on currently another issue right now. And James has just been, he's been a go-to guy. He's a workhorse is what he is. He's a comic book workhorse is what he is in the independent comic book world. He is everything that is good about independent comic book creating. Simple as that. And I'm really privileged to work with him.
Wow.
Damn, Don. I'm not really exactly sure how to live up to that intro. Yeah, this is my second issue on Vampire, and like Don said, he's got the thing separated with time periods. This is my second one in the old in like the in the 1800s, right, John? or Don, right, Don?
Yeah, yeah. It's it's in the, yeah, because the first one you did was in the during the Civil War, and then it's set in like the 1880s, 1890s.
Yeah, type it's like of right thing, after so. The Civil War. So
yeah, so
yeah.
Do you mind if I jump in and explain what the character's about?
No, go right ahead.
Okay. First of all, let me also say a big thank you, Dave and John. I really, James Schumacher, James Burton, and other comic book independent creators have said incredibly kind things about you. And the independent comic book world, creating small press, whatever you want to call it, basically, it's a very, very, very difficult world to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say that anybody that helps us just even share just a podcast that can have 100,000 listeners to 10 listeners and their mother, we welcome, like, thank you very much for doing this, because we really, really, it's these little guys like this. It's like literally small press is word of mouth type of thing.
Yeah.
And you guys help spread that word. So massive thank you to Superhero Speak and to you guys. And I would like to officially on air invite you to submit, if you can give me a one page ad for Superhero Speak, I will put it in the next issue of the Vampire of the Lost Highway that comes out, issue number 3. And it's pretty much free of charge for you guys. Seriously, if you'd be up for doing that. That way it just saves me the trouble of having to make the ad for you. But if you can make it for me, I'd like to put it in the next issue.
Well, cool. Thanks very much for the offer. And thank you for describing the size of our audience. It is 12 guys and Dave's mom.
No, my mom doesn't know how to use a computer. Are you kidding?
Well, that's why it's on, because she can't turn it off.
Oh, gotcha. I just had a mental picture of some old woman in a dark room with a computer that just will not shut off. She just plays.
I think there's something that she
over and over until she goes slowly insane.
Norman, I can't get on the wide, wide world of the web. Norman!
Internet is broken.
Super interwebs is broken, Norman. Mother.
Oh, I'm sure there's something in the Geneva conventions about Superhero Speak and leaving it on in front of them.
Actually, though, before you continue on, we understand that, like, you guys who are in the trenches doing books yourselves, it's a passion thing. You're doing this because you love the medium. And you have stories you want to tell, and you think this is the best medium to tell it. And it's, you know, it's hard to get into Marvel, DC, Image, you know, those guys. So doing it yourself, you really love it. And we understand that. That's why we do everything in our power to help spread the word about independent comics.
Thank you. Thank you very much for doing that. We really, the creators out there, we really do appreciate it. I mean, it's guys like seriously, thank you. I can't say that enough, and without this becoming too much of a mutual admiration society, it really, really is just very good of you guys to just help us out like that. Because it's one of those things where it's like, I can't not do it. Like, you know, it's like some people say, you won't or you can't. I can't not write a comic book. I can't not wake up in the morning and go, well, I'm done with the vampire. I mean, I may come to a point where I finish making the comic book and say, you know what? I think I've told every story that I'm going to tell, you know, like, how they came to an end with Cerebus, or I may end up doing something what, Eric Larson did with Savage Dragon. And basically he just every so often, he's like, okay, now I've got a police drama. I want to shift this up a little bit. And he sets it on a starship, does a little shifting here and there. And now he's got a sword and sorcery tale.
Yep.
Featured around that. I may do stuff like that. And I like that idea of being able to do that. But for the most part, I just, it's one of those things where it's sort of like the real creators, they have to do this. They really have to do this. And before I go back to my original thing about telling you what the vampire was about,
mm-hmm.
I was watching something about South Park today, and they were doing that. And I was watching the Nostalgia Critic, and he was discussing his favorite episodes of South Park.
Oh, that was originally from 2013. They just reposted it on YouTube.
Oh, did they? Okay. I hadn't seen it back then. And one of the things they talked about, it was the episode where Cartman starts a Christian band. And
oh God, I love that episode.
And the thing that was so funny about it was at the very end of it, Stan, Kyle, and Kenny, I don't know what, remember if he was dead or Butters or if it was Tweak or whatever, they all looked at the artists and they're just kind of like, look, you've got to create. You create whether you make money or not. Your audience will find you. And I sat there and I just went, yeah, that's pretty much us. That's exactly us. That's the I did an interview with a local punk band called 68 Mathematics. Great band. And I said, do you guys ever worry that punk music is never going to be as big as it was? And their lead singer, Alana Cartuccio, screamed, F them, we'll play what we want. And the rest of the band said, yeah, and our fans find us. People that like this music find us. And that's what The Vampire does. That's what The Vampire and independent comic books are. Their audience will find them. And it's sort of like the creators, would we love to be making millions of dollars on this? Without a shadow of a doubt. I am ready to sell out. I really am. but at the same time, we keep pushing on with this because we have to. If we didn't, it would literally kill us not to be able to create this.
Right.
So that's why I have such a love for this and just a love for storytelling. And there's just something about just reprocessing all the stuff that you read as a child and just sharing it from a different perspective and sharing it with your original work. I mean, it's like for years, this – in a weird way, to be an independent creator is basically like doing your own fan fiction, but really, really twisting it around. Because like Stephen King once said, the reason why Terry Brooks wrote the Shannara series is because he still wanted to hang out with Frodo in the Shire. He still wanted to go traveling with Merry and Frodo and Pippin and the rest of them. They still want to do that. And it's that's one of the reasons why people keep doing what they do. It's because there's just something saying like, yeah, that was good. And I love the story that you wrote, but let me do it a little bit better or do it different. And that's what drives the independent creator. And that's why I do what I do. And I have the opportunity to work with great guys like James Burton here. And also at the same time, I get a chance to talk about it with wonderful podcasts like you guys here.
Well, in the case of Terry Brooks, he did blow up the entire planet Earth and you know, create a post-apocalyptic world in order to bring up more hobbits. So
I will say this, though. I read a couple of his books, and like reading a Terry Brooks book is like eating dried toast. It really is. I'm sorry. It's just like you just sit there and just go, where's the jelly? Where's the butter?
Right.
And just keep going and going and going. And it's just ugh.
The Elfstones weren't too bad, but his other series with Nest, and I forget the name of the series, but it was like a
Night Quest type of thing.
Yeah, well, his original series was set in the present tense, and he eventually tied that in with the Shannara series, which you then realize takes place like hundreds of years in the future. But you know, but yeah, I want to sit with Frodo. Let me blow up the planet first.
That's what I would do.
He created his own hobbits.
What the hell does that mean when I spend my time drawing stuff like the vampire and then turn around and draw damage and watch them blow up an emergency room just to be able to fight a man shark?
Well, that's awesome. That's what that's
called. That's what, I'll tell you what that means. That means you've got a heck of a job to do, and I wish I had it.
That's true. I giggle maniacally usually the entire time and make sound effects, so I can't complain too much.
His sweet wife should put up a recording of it, and all you hear is just 20 minutes of scribble, scribble, scribble. Scribble, scribble, scribble.
That's scribble, actually not too far.
That's awesome.
That's when you know the good work is being done.
yes it is. So if I may, The Vampire of the Last Highway is the story of this person who is condemned to this road in the Midwestern county of Fort Hawk County, and he is condemned to basically fly up and down the highway, and he just helps people that are stranded in need. And he's been doing this for the last 200 years. And in each story, each comic book takes place at a different time period. with the vampire kind of showing up and saving the day in some shape or form. And where the inspirations come from is actually not in comic books at all. Let me say this though. I grew up adoring comic books. My characters were the New Warriors, as they were written by Fabian Nicieza. I'm going to ruin his name.
Mm-hmm.
Thunderbolts, Astro City, Quasar. And every so often when the Avengers really were kicking butt, when like Kurt Busiek would be writing it and stuff, just an absolute beautiful run. And those were the guys I was into. And I really, really, and that was the stuff that really shaped me. Of course, eventually I fell back in love with my super friends, as I call them, Batman, Superman, Green Lantern. Green Lantern was my guy. The Flash, when he was written by Mark Waid, yes. The Wally West, when he was written by Mark Waid, was an absolutely excellent run. Peter David's run on The Incredible Hulk mm-hmm. was so much fun. I remember being at my grandmother's house when I couldn't sleep, just sitting there reading them. And I also had the run of Transformers for a while, and I really, really enjoyed. Those to me were really excellent comic book creating, and that was where I learned my craft. But in about 2011, 2009, I started getting into I had just left my job as a newspaper reporter, and I started as an independent creator, and I had a lot of free time on my hands. And I spent a lot of time listening to paranormal podcasts, you know, people interviewing people that had claimed that they've encountered Bigfoot, were kidnapped by aliens, saw unusual things, and ghost stories.
Mm-hmm.
And about this time, I live in New Jersey, hopefully. I live in New Jersey, which is, good Lord, it is an awful state. And one of the upsides about Jersey is the legend of Jersey Devil. And mm-hmm. And of course, like I've always been, I've liked those type of legends. The Jersey Devil, the Mothman in West Virginia. Those type of things. And I had the chance, I made friends with this wonderful writer by the name of Robert Schneck. And Robert wrote a book called The President's Vampire that came out in I forget when it was, 2010, 2011. And as a side note, one of his stories is has just been turned into a movie with Doug Jones. It's called The Bye-Bye Man. You can look it up. It's an absolutely excellent story, and it's really amazing, and it all came from this book. Well, he had this story about President Johnson supposedly being involved with pardoning a man that was accused of being a vampire. And when I saw the picture on Robert's cover of a giant vampire bat, I was like, oh, that is so unusual to think of a vampire as a vampire bat, our definition of what a vampire is in 2016 is somewhat different from what it was in, say, 1860.
Right.
They sparkle.
Yeah. They sparkle. And basically one of the things that was so, that was so amazing with that was I love that concept of taking a vampire type of concept, like, not having somebody that's a vampire, but that's his nickname, like the Jersey Devil. Jersey Devil was never named after, like, he's not a fallen angel that sided with Lucifer. That's just the name that they gave him. Mm-hmm. And I like the concept of using the vampire for somebody that was not a vampire. And the idea of using, I was writing a short story, like originally this started as a short story. And the idea came from like, oh, can you write a dark superhero story that has a really, that it's about a superhero, but has a different style to it. And I thought, you know, I could do one of these, like, I'll take like the whole paranormal crazy thing and turn that into a superhero. So that's what I basically did. And that's what the vampire is that this is like the story is told of somebody who's researching and uncovering these encounters with this thing called the vampire. Mm-hmm. And because technically he's not a vampire, you know, he's not sucking blood, sparkling, saving Kristen Stewart's life when it would have been better if he had let the truck hit her. He's just this poor cursed guy that can stretch that basically has wings appear out of nowhere, like Optimus Prime losing the truck. And
dude, I still remember the day you told me about that, and I was like, "What?" It took me a second. I was like, "Oh, it's like the trailer." That like metaphor made it work for me.
Yeah, exactly. They just get like he needs wings. Boom, he's got wings. He doesn't need wings. The wings are gone. So, and so like I kind of took all of that together, and I basically this was the story that I told, and it's very and forgive me for being so long winded, but that's. That's basically what the vampire is and its origins and why I created it in a bit of a nutshell.
Yeah. So we're going to see the skunk ape and Lake Ogopogo next, right?
Oh, please. I was actually debating about things like that. I was actually.
Well, it's kind of got like this whole lost, like for me, Don, whenever I'm reading one of your scripts, like the one I'm working on right now, which I'm not going to spoil it for everybody.
Right.
It's really good. But for me, I like the fact that it's in different places and at different times. It reminds me of, you know, stuff like the Night Stalker, and it reminds me of stuff like what? Somebody's whispering.
Sorry. Ooh,
wait, let's listen in.
Sorry. Sorry. No, James, I'm sorry. Continue. Continue.
Well, dude, it totally reminds me of that whole investigative theme. I think that when you're doing your scripts, that the best time is when you're setting up those moments where it's got that feeling like somebody's looking into it. It kind of reminds me of like reading Bram Stoker, not as in like this creepy, gothic, insanely like a horrible Satanist Dracula stuff, but as in when I first read Bram Stoker, it was the guy was investigating what was going on. He was trying to figure out stuff, and right. It read like that. At least it read like that to me. And it kind of always feels like it's like he's trying to figure out these things that happen, and then this. You know, this anti-hero keeps popping up into the story, and I dig that part about it.
Right. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, because that's what I was going for. I was trying to see, like, I don't mean to sound like the typical cliche, you know, like how Spider-Man, but I always thought the concept of having a superhero that was really not very good looking was kind of interesting, you know, like going in that dark man direction.
He's in the direction. That's definitely
that's the other extreme, isn't it?
Like, yeah, yeah, where it's kind of like, because like, say what you will about Superman. I'm like, Superman, Batman, I mean, like, they're handsome men. It's kind of like, it's like, oh, yes, I've had a bad day, but darn, I've got a chin.
And, they were chiseled from the same block of granite.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas the vampire, he doesn't look like that. He wears a mask over his face. Like he wears something that covers his nose and his mouth at all times. And he's one of those guys like, you know, it's like people talk about like when they look up and see Superman, there's this level of, oh, thank God he's here. The vampire, if you were to meet him, he's that guy you try not to make eye contact with on the bus or the subway or in a diner someplace.
Ah, so like John.
Hey. Just add wings onto John and take away his liquor. And
now let's not go too far.
It's not a threat. It's not a threat. It's just
well, if you take away his liquor, you'll see how ugly he'll really get.
Give me back my hooch.
So I'm trying to understand something here. The vampire himself, he doesn't actually show up until like the end of the stories, or
it depends on when it is. It depends on when it is. Like the first story, he showed up midway through. I'm sorry.
He shows up on, I think, like page 12 or something.
He'll show up like halfway through because I have to do a lot of that. That's one of the hard parts about this is doing a lot of story setup.
Right.
Like it's kind of like the story. At least the script I'm working on now and the last script that I did, the main character, the vampire, he's there, but he's like a backdrop. Yes, he's there. But the real story, like in the one I did before, was about this orphanage that was destroyed in the Civil War. And Don explained it by interacting with some demons and some other stuff. But the story was about this poor kid who watched the thing like go up in the flames and watched like all of what happened to his friends and then what happened to him afterwards and the soldiers who were going through it on the battlefield and how they felt after the battle, watching one of their own commanders like order them to destroy this orphanage and stuff. So even though there was some kick-ass demon on vampire action where there was like, you know, guys getting punched in the face and thrown to trees and stuff like that, that was just a part of the story. The main part of the story was what was going on inside of these soldiers' heads and what was going on and happening to these kids who were basically getting thrown out into this world while it was all going on.
Right.
Yeah, because that's what it boils down to is that it's sort of like I try to make each story different and coming from a certain type of focus. And it's because it's sort of like the one downside with every like it becomes formulaic after a while. Like I remember when I was growing up, I spent a summer in Virginia living with my grandmother, and they had old episodes of the Bill Bixby Incredible Hulk, and I would watch about three or four episodes, and then about like the fifth or sixth one, I remember going, okay, it's like 10 minutes after, like it's 10 minutes after, and then I would be like, oh, okay, and like, oh, here comes the Hulk, and I looked over and I go, oh, it's 10 minutes after the hour. And then the next day I noticed it again. I was like, oh, so the Hulk shows up at like 10 minutes of and 15 minutes before the end. So, I mean, I didn't want to do it that way. Where
it, damn it, I wish I'd have noticed that. I'd only watched those time parts in that show.
Fast
where
forward,
were
fast
you
forward.
30 years ago, damn it?
Virginia, apparently, for that one summer. So, I mean, and it's and that's the hard part is that a lot of times because – what has made the vampire so different was because like I knew that as an independent creator, I wanted to make my own comic. And you ask any independent creator, you're lucky if a single issue can get out within a year.
Right.
And so I didn't want to do like of course, like every comic book writer and every writer, I have grandiose multi-story arc ideas that I would love to do. But I just knew what was feasible and what would and wouldn't work. And for me, I had to do a almost anthology series. I had to do have it set at different times, but around the same character. And because the upside is I have James working. I have two wonderful artists named Brenda Salazar, who she recently did a project on Tesla, and another artist, his name's Chandra Kelly, and I've got them working on a project. And so it's like I've got three artists working at the same time now. So eventually these will all come together and I can have six issues out, each of them very different, but yet around the same character. So that way you're not going, okay, let me do a to be continued at the end of issue one. And then come issue two, you've got to wait 18 months for it. I'm not HBO. I'm not BBC America, and I'm going to do that to Doctor Who fans. I try to do it in such a way so that it's all self-contained issues. And the other thing is I do a lot of this as a massive reaction to all of this multi-story arc bull crap that DC and Marvel keep putting out that, as far as I'm concerned, has completely wreck the industry.
You mean the one where you have to collect like 50 different titles in order to see the same story?
Yeah.
See, follow the whole thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just seeing that with Rebirth. It's crazy.
How many times have they rebooted that stupid universe now?
Well, you know, when the plug keeps coming out of the wall, you have to plug it back in and then restart the universe, and that's what happens.
Remember, guys, it's when Dr. Manhattan gets bored now.
No, yeah, that's right. Sorry.
All
or when he sneezes or passes gas or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. All I can say is if this were my car, I would have replaced the battery already.
Yeah, they gave themselves the ultimate MacGuffin. So if this doesn't pan out, they can just go, Dr. Manhattan did it again, and here's a new universe for you.
Oopsies.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just – and that's the thing. It was just kind of like what did it for me was after Brightest Day. After that series, I just walked away from the whole thing. And at the same time, Marvel tries pushing Civil War, tried pushing Secret Invasion. And it was just like DC tried pushing Final Crisis. They tried pushing all of this. And I was a big, in about 2005, I was a massive Green Lantern fan, and I loved the return of Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Rebirth or Recharge, or what I think it's Rebirth, the one that has Hal Jordan becoming Green Lantern again. I consider that an absolute work of art. It is an absolute work of literature. It to me is right up there with Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Dracula, anything Sherlock Holmes, all of that. And it's like on my list of, okay, if you're stuck on a deserted island, what books do you want? And Green Lantern Rebirth is one of them. And I loved that series. But it got to the point where the one thing I have been begging for comic creators is give me a status quo. As silly as it sounds, like you go back and you know those big thick DC books that came out where it's like all black and white reprints of issues from like the 50s and 60s?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, you go back and read those. Those things were amazing. They were so much fun. And it's all like Hal Jordan's going out to dinner with Carol Ferris every other night, and she's like, I'm going to make him tell me that he's Green Lantern and other stuff like that. And Green Lantern has not had anything like that in a long, long time.
Right.
And it was just kind of like, and I'll tell you, the whole Captain America Hail Hydra thing, that I will flat out tell you the reason why people are upset about that is they finally get Captain America back. And you know what? Give him about six issues where you drop him in the middle of something and he beats up bad guys. That's what people want. Don't completely change his status quo again. He went from being a young guy to a 99-year-old guy back to being a young guy again. And then as the young guy finds out, he's been a double agent all this time. That's what annoys people. It's not that, oh my gosh, because you can easily write that out. It's just give us a simple story. Please. And I think that that's what's aggravated so many people was we get Captain America back. We're excited. We don't have to deal with Captain America Falcon. We don't get Bucky Captain America. We get Steve Rogers back as some version of Captain America. That's awesome. But then when they did the Hail Hydra thing, we're like, no, we don't get that. We don't get.
So what you're saying is instead of giving us a CW serial, what you want is individual storylines that have actual payoffs instead of just before the payoff, instead switching everything and telling you, oh, by the way, the character's been dead all this time, or, you know, all this
or something like that. They just, like, it's one of those things where it's kind of like for me, everybody talks about how great Supernatural is. I loved it the first five seasons when it was them going up and dealing with the freak of the week type of thing. And that's what I enjoy. I enjoy that type of thing. But then when it got to the point where it's like, now we've got to explore the myth, we've got to explore the mythos of it, change it around. Why are the brothers doing? Let's send one to hell. Let's send the other to hell. Let's bring them back. Let's send the other guy to hell. Now we'll bring an angel. Now let's bring in Mark Shepard, who really should be the master on Doctor Who. I mean, it's just like they do all this stuff, and it's just after a while, can we go back to what the heart of it is? Come up with a bad guy and then do this. And look, I'm not knocking the Crisis on Infinite Earth multi-story Secret Wars. There is a place for them. Just not every 6 months rebooting the status quo again. It's like give us about six months of the hero fighting regular bad guys, and then if you really want to tell a story that changes the status quo, give us 6 months of that, then go back to 6 months of with the new status quo him fighting individual bad guys, that type of thing.
Well, you know, I mean, I was collecting when I was in college in 1990, and you know, Armageddon came out, and that's what drove me out of comics, was because of the crossovers that had me try. I was at college. I had a very small budget. I was working on the side trying to support myself at the time. And yeah, I just couldn't go to the comic store and spend almost $100 every week just to collect everything I needed to do to get the single storyline. But I wanted to go back to something else you said that I'm interested to hear the answer to. You said that it takes 12 months for an independent to get out a comic book. Could you explain? Could you tell me what the process is and why it takes that long and what the delays are and all that?
Oh yeah, honestly, life.
Life. Oh, that. Okay.
Yeah, no. I'm not trying to be a wise guy about this. No, I mean I'm completely serious about that. For The Vampire of the Lost Highway, it will take me about a month. Like I can probably get out a script in about 1 to 2 weeks if I really, really want to do that. Like, and what that is that it's like, again, every one of us, like, show of hands, who here has a day job? Yeah, exactly.
You mean my hand is up?
Yeah. My hand is up. My hand is up. Everybody's hand
visuals
is up.
On a podcast. Yay.
Okay. All you podcasting people listening, show of hands. Do you have a day job? Yes, you do. How else do you afford this stuff? Because mom's allowance only goes so far.
Yes. This is a free podcast. So.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, I'm talking about the fans listening that buy comic books and other stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, the people that'll shell out like $800 for an autographed Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man helmet, that type of thing.
Yeah, and, it's not like they go to Darth Vader comics on YouTube and watch them. Oh, wait, I shouldn't have said that.
Well, but the thing is that what that is that it'll take me about maybe about a month or so to get that. And this is assuming that I have an artist lined up, because the other thing is that finding an independent artist, that's another challenge as well, because on one hand, you have to find someone that could fit within your budget. And sometimes you can work with an artist and say like, oh, can I work on a back end deal with you? And I will promise you that I will get the project out. And then you'll meet other, and sometimes like it's a weird, weird combination where it goes back and forth, where sometimes the artists will be like, yeah, sure, I'll be more than happy to work with you. And then you never hear from them again. And then other artists.
I don't know if you know this, Don. This might be like a insider trade secret.
Oh,
artists, little flaky.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then you also have another group of artists that are, it's this angry, paranoid, you're going to steal my work. Like, I'll put in hundreds and hundreds of hours and you'll only pay me like enough money for me to buy a soda from the soda machine or something like that. And there's
skip that topic.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, and then you deal with those, and there's ways of working around all of this where everybody feels like they're being appreciated for their efforts in their work and compensated for their efforts in work. And then you get some people like, I've placed ads, and I'll get people that'll say like, look, I've got a limited budget. And I'll get some guys, they'll say something like, yeah, sure, I'll be more than happy to do it for the arranged price. And then I get other people that are like I really got, they're just practically screaming, like, you're going to take advantage of these people, have nothing to do with them. And well, then you'll get other guys that'll kind of like say, oh, I see you have a limited budget. For $100 a page, here's what I can do. And I'm just like, I can barely afford lunch, let alone to pay $100 a page type of thing. And these guys are worth it, though. That's what I'm saying. The guys that charge like 50, 60, 70, 80, $100 a page, they are worth it. But when you're dealing with independent creators that are still trying to keep a basic roof over their head, it gets a bit crazy. So yeah, after you've gone through all of that and you can work with an artist that you can agree upon something with, then you have to more or less say, okay, here's page one. Here's like, they basically turn the pages in as fast as they can do it. And because here's the other thing that every comic book creator needs to understand, especially the writers, because the writers have the hardest time. Comic book artists, the independent ones, they can easily parlay this into something else with the bigger guys, easily. But for the creators, you have to understand that it is basically the comic book artist that does the heavy lifting. And if you do not respect that, then you will have an even more difficult time in the world of independent comic books. Simple as that. If you do not respect that, and sometimes by means of respecting that, it will take them. Here's the artist will turn in page 1, 2, 3, 1 week, and then you won't hear from them for a month and a half because at that moment they're fighting a disease. Their kid has just gotten sick. They have gotten laid off from their job and they're trying to find another job. They are doing things like that. Well,
And that's true, Don, but they should still be communicating like with you. Like, I'll use me and you as an example, right? When Inheritance started, it was right before you and I started working on the issue of Vampire that I'm working on right now.
Right.
And we talked about that, and I said, hey, dude, this other thing is taken off, and it's getting really well reviewed. I'm working on this other thing with a publisher, and if it goes, I'm going to have to take a break and come back to it. You and I talked about it. We were upfront about it, and I think that's completely and totally valid. Everything that you're saying is. But at the same point, if the artist isn't going to talk about it, or it's the inker or the letterer, and they just disappear on you, then that's not okay either. It's got to be
with what the example that I was given, I was assuming that it would be said that they were going back and forth. What I should have said was, you don't get another page for a month and a half type of thing. That's what I mean. But still, in that time, you're talking, the artist is saying, look, I'm having a hard time right now. And you have to, and you have no choice but to sit back and wait for that, because of, like, again, if I was paying $100 a page, it's like, dude, I don't care, your house is on fire, I'm paying you $100 a page, I want my page tomorrow. Versus, hey, I'm only able to pay you X amount of dollars, I have no choice but to wait for you to finish with your, to finish, or basically when your daughter gets out of the hospital or something like that. And it's sort of like, you have to. And also at the same time, if you're a creator and you're working with an artist like this, don't be a jerk to them. Be a friend. Be a friend. Go, okay, look, you're having a bad time, let's talk about it. What can I do to help? What can I do? For me, I'm a religious person. I like praying. I believe in the power of prayer. Can I pray with you? Can I pray for your situation? Okay, you're not comfortable with that? Do you mind if I do it on my own at another time? Okay, that's great. Can I listen to you? What do you need? Can I write something nice for you? Can I write a story to cheer your daughter up? That's the type of thing that that a creator should be doing with his artist. And those type of things. I mean, some people say, like, oh, but it's business and stuff. Yes, it's business. But at the same time, we're all we got. Independent creators are all we got, from the writers to the artists. We're all we got in this field. And it's sort of like, and if you don't, and if that person does not respect that, then basically they're what's wrong with the independent creator world.
No, that's true. I mean, and it's funny too, because I was doing some math in my head and I'm sitting there going, you know, $100 a page. If it's a new project, $100 a page, just to say it's a 30-page book, that's $3,000 for you to do that book. That means you have to sell, let's say, at $3 an issue, 1,000 to make your money back.
Yeah.
Just to make your money back on the art. And you don't know if it's going to take off or not.
Right, exactly.
That's the risk the writer takes when they're paying the artist, that the artist has to understand. Like, there, right. For example, guys, there's another writer friend of ours, Schumacher, he's continuing on the Inheritance story, right? Mm-hmm. And he's working things out with the artist and whatnot. And one of the things that he has to deal with is that aspect. And some artists that I've helped him talk to don't really get that concept, that they're not taking the risk outside of that, that you know, and they quote him like some ridiculous amount. And while those prices are fair in the right circumstances, and they're awesome, and I can say that I have gotten them in the right scenario. There's a company that I work with where I get paid like that. In that capacity, you kind of have to make sure that you're bringing your stuff to the table, and not everybody gets that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's basically what it boils down to, is that there has to be this level. And the thing was, is that I don't want to name names, but there was an independent company a few years back that was notorious for not paying their artists, and they were had some very high profile projects. And
by the way, thank you for steering me clear of them. Anyway, keep going.
And I know the people that are involved with that, and I like them. I genuinely like them. But the thing was, they developed a reputation for not paying the artist. And what that, I believe, did was it created this ripple effect. I mean, like, you'll hear stories where, like, artists like Ethan Van Sciver, I mean, the guy's able to, like he's not hurting, is what down to. He's not hurting. And you'll hear of other stories of artists. I remember reading that Mark Wade back in the mid-1990s made a couple of $100,000 as a writer. And I actually had that hanging up on my wall for a long, long time. Nice. And it's kind of like, Yeah, people think like artists kind of have this naivete. Where they think, okay, how can I get Alex Ross style money type of thing? They think
easy. You find Alex Ross and you rob him. There you go.
They think of that sort of thing. So, I mean, that's part of the process of all of this.
Gotcha.
Right. No, but I also kind of think that part of the problem, and you know, not everyone suffers from this, but there are a lot of young artists who, it's just our society anymore. People don't realize they have to work to get to that level. Like, yeah. You're not going to start out making $100 a page. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
No, but speaking as the guy that has to struggle with that, like, it's a challenge that you don't just like take on any old project and then, you know, eat it. It's a fine line. And that's where you just, you know, you work with people you trust and you keep your projects in the right scope. Like, getting back to your question, dude, when you're asking, like, what would stop some of those projects when you see them? And sometimes it comes down to scope. Like, maybe the writer says it's going to be, you know, X number of pages, and then it turns into other pages. Or maybe something else happens. Maybe the publisher thinks that the story doesn't make sense, so they have to add something. And all those things kind of add up to it. And you get that combined with everybody's needs, and it turns into, like, a mishmash.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the big thing is that it's kind of like there needs to be this constant state of communication and this constant state of what's happening, what are we doing, tell me what's happening, and it's important for the creator or the head of the project to keep everyone abreast of what's happening, to keep them in the communication, because if not, it's going to lead to a lot of angry feelings, and it's going to lead to a lot of it's going to cause a lot of trouble. And it's sort of one of these things where it's like, we already have so many obstacles as it is as comic book creators, that the last thing we need is to cause difficulty for somebody else. Right. unless we constantly stay in touch and say what's going on, that type of thing. And that's pretty much the big stuff in all of this.
Hey, Don, I got a question for you, because I don't think we've ever talked about it before. When it comes to the vampire, like, I know what era I'm in, but how far are you going to carry the story? Is some of it going to go deep into the future? And, like, how far does the story go back? Like, I know my...
Oh, 1825. 1825, that's as far back. Yeah, that's when the vampire made us... Well, because I'm actually working on a book about the vampire, and I had already written several chapters of it before I said, hey, this would make a good comic book. So for me, I know exactly who he is and what's going on and why he's happening and stuff like that. But he probably won't be around. Like, he probably I have him set between today and 1825. I really am not interested in going too far into the doing a Batman Beyond type of thing where it's Vampire Beyond or like Vampire on the Enterprise or something silly like that. I could be talking to Vampire Doctor Who, but
there you go. Vampire Sherlock Doctor Who.
Vampire Sherlock has not crossed my mind.
Oh, crap. We talked about that.
Yeah, we have. James and I have actually gone back and forth on that. And one of these days I may get around to it.
Nice. So before we're completely out of time, not yet, but where can people currently get the book if they're interested?
That's kind of a touchy subject at the moment. The vampire... Well, I'll put it to you this way. Recently, I announced on my website, donsmithwrites.wordpress.com, that The Vampire was published with a company that chose to no longer publish it. And it was not at all because of the lack of quality or that it wasn't a moneymaker. It was the publisher just basically says something's happening.
Right.
And that's it. And they are no longer available. The vampire is no longer – vampire issues 1 and 2 are no longer available for the public. And that is not my choice.
No, but it's also going to change really soon, right?
I was about to mention that.
I couldn't handle the tension, Don. You were
yeah,
getting
I'm
again.
Sorry. I'm trying to say this through being as diplomatic as I possibly can. I have been talking with somebody, and I flat out said time and time again, the vampire is too great of a character to keep down, and I'm not going to let the actions of other people that are beyond my control prevent him from not returning.
Mm-hmm.
This, at the risk of sounding like a child, it genuinely is not fair what happened. And so basically, one of the things I've learned is you have to take life on life's terms.
Right.
And life on life's terms right now means I have to seek things elsewhere. I had two publishers in mind that I reached out to, and one of them, and I said, if neither one works out with these two publishers, I will sit down and I will publish it myself. I will create my own imprint of comic books. Mm-hmm. I will call it Superhero Speak Comic Books.
and then we'll sue you. I mean, no.
I'll pay you in Jack Daniels.
Sold. I'm cheap.
And basically right now, I'm very close to signing an agreement with somebody. I just got the agreement in the mail today. Oh, cool. And I have to read through it. I want to give it a 2 cents. I'll be flat out honest with you. I'll be candid. My goal was to announce who it was tonight on the Superhero Speak. I really wanted to, but when it took a while, the publisher was going back and forth with the work agreement, and him and I were going back and forth, and I don't want to jump the gun. Because right. The vampire is too special for me to jump the gun. This is my wife and I, Laura, wonderful, sweet woman and very talented, fine artist herself. We don't have kids. We've got three cats and I've got a comic book. And these are the closest things to children that we have for me. This is mm-hmm. closest things to children. And I want to do right by this character. I've been in situations where what it boiled down to was the publication history was I met one local publisher here and very, very unprofessional people. And they sat on the first issue of The Vampire for a year.
Oh, dude, I remember that.
And they sat on it for a very long time and did nothing with it. And it angered me. And I finally said, you know, I've been waiting a year for this stupid thing. Give me back my comic book. I took it back. I took the comic book back. And then I found the second publishers. And the second publishers got two issues out to their credit. But then with their recent direction, now The Vampire and issues 1 and 2 are not available to the public. And that really, really is very, very disappointing. And it makes me, it really does make me incredibly unhappy about this. And I'm not saying this in like silly generic terms. I mean, it really does make me, because it's one of these things where it's like my creation is at the mercy of other people. And I do not like that. And it's not available for other people to have. And that is really, really, really very, very sad is what it boils down to.
The important part though, Don, is that you're working that stuff out and you're going to bounce back.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Of course. Yes. Yes, I know. And I don't mean to sound like I'm obviously I'm very unhappy about that. And like I said, we're taking life on life's terms and I will be very candid with the audience that I asked Dave and John not to talk about who the publishers are and what was all involved, because I don't want to be known as that guy that, you know, it's like, remember, like, I don't know if you guys are wrestling fans, but it was like when Bret Hart left the WWF in 1997-98 under the Montreal Screwjob, and he went over to WCW, it was like, oh, cool, he's here. But then he wouldn't stop talking about how the WWF screwed him over.
Right.
And after a while, it was, come on, dude, move on and get past it. And to be honest with you, people don't care about other people getting screwed over because they're worried about their own lives. And I don't want to be that guy. But at the same time, I do admit my feelings about the whole thing was that it was a very disappointing experience. And I don't, like I said, I don't want to go down in that direction. But at the same time, this creation is too, it's too much a part of me. It's too powerful for me just to let it go and go, well, that sucks. Thanks a lot. We had a good day, had a good run. Take care, everybody. No, the vampire will be back. I promise you. Simple as that. The vampire will be back.
No, I mean, number one, you're an artist and you can't keep an artist quiet for long. And two,
I resemble that remark.
Exactly. Yes. And two, it's the issues exist in some way. It's just finding a new way to distribute them. And you wouldn't be on here tonight talking about it if there wasn't a possibility of this happening. So we believe in.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm going to do this, though. My email address is donsmith1974@yahoo.com. If you send me an email address, I will email you a PDF of the first two issues. That is how I will handle this for the time being. For at least the next week or two, if you email me, I will personally email you both issues, or at least figure out a Dropbox location so that you can pick up the issues. That is how I will do that. That is how I will display it, and that is how I will get the comic book out there for the time being.
See, folks, you hear it here first. Free comics.
Free comics. For the next week or so, you send me an email, I will send you both issues, one and two.
Cool.
Is how I will do that. And then, but I will say this, though, I will stop doing that when we officially get with the new publisher.
Right.
So, but send me an email, donsmith1974@yahoo.com, and I will send you I will send you personally both issues.
Cool. So James, is there anything else you've been working on right now you want to tell people about?
Yeah. I'm working on that script with him, which is the killer script about Vampire. But then right after that, I'm going to be working on Nothing But Damage Incorporated.
Yes. Oh. Yes. That is a great comic that he has worked very hard on.
Damage Inc. is the story about five buddies who go out and they start a business together hunting down supernatural creatures and paranormal powered humans, but they suck at it. So it usually ends up in some type of gunfire and smack talk and some kind of thing. I'm working with, I've signed Damage over to Scatter Comics here in Sacramento. I am working with Jason Doobie and the guys over there. Yeah. They're great local creators that are very supportive of a lot of different stuff. And I've known them for a while. I've been talking to them for quite some time. And we're going to be doing first a crossover with the Shadowhunters series. And then right after that is going to be the main Damage series that goes on after that. And that can be, you guys can find that at Damage Incorporated is on Facebook. If you just search for Damage Incorporated comic, and you can also find it on my website, which is angrybrainartworks.com. And as I'm getting them done, they're going to appear on my website or on Tapas. I'm still setting that up, as a web comic as it gets built up. So it's going to be both a web comic and in print.
Oh, cool.
And we'll keep an eye out definitely for, in fact, Don, let us know once you know, all the details with your publisher, and we'll make sure we announce it on the show and let everyone know.
If I may say this, I'd like to come on and break it.
Oh, okay. We can do that.
Yeah. If that would be okay. I would only want, like, give me about 5 minutes and say, here it is. Here's the info and blah, blah, blah.
No, we don't want any breaking news whatsoever because, you know, that might be good for our viewership. Yes.
Listenership?
Yeah.
Why would a media group want breaking?
No, not at all.
They could just spit out rhetoric.
Yeah, exactly.
All the other news agencies are angry.
Pretty much.
That is an entirely other conversation. Or rant, should I say. We'll post links. Probably better for your free comic offer is to just put it in Dropbox, create a public link, and then we can post the public link, and that will work for as long as you want it to.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. I see why to do that, but I'd much rather get an email.
Right. You want a connection with them.
Yeah, I want to connect people because I want people to know that it's there as opposed to just a straightforward like, oh, here, anybody could take the comic, because I want to have – I don't want to quite go Napster with everything at the same time.
You see, a recluse like me wouldn't have understood that. So,
yeah. Oh, okay. Gotcha. But if I can take a moment and plug this, I also have a website dedicated to Sherlock Holmes called the Sherlock Conversations.
The Empire Sherlock Holmes? Oh, sorry.
And that's called it's sherlockconversations.wordpress.com. And it's also, if you go to facebook.com/Sherlock Conversations, and I do interviews with Sherlock Holmes creators, actors, singers, performers, and also at the same time, it gives me an excuse to talk about Doctor Who as well, because I've always thought that there's a very Doctor Who and Sherlock are weirdly interconnected in ways.
Oh, come
and
on.
So
we all know they're eventually going to do a story where it turns out Doctor Who is Sherlock.
I would welcome that. I really would. So,
Don, you do understand that Conan Doyle isn't around anymore, right?
Yeah.
Well, except with Doctor Who, he could go back in time and bring him back. So there you go.
Well, no, because he said he interviews the creator. I mean, you know.
No. I mean, like, creators of Sherlock pastiches.
Yeah, a gigantic chunk of Sherlock is in public domain, so it gets used. Yeah. That's why it appears so often. It's kind of like how Disney uses just plunders the public domain over copyright issues. It's kind of the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
He's basically Batman that everybody can use.
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of that, I heard something interesting the other day that, you know, technically, Superman is in public domain now too.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, and so is Mickey Mouse, but
the original version of Superman. So, you know, can't fly. You know, just the original power suit set. But, you know, so I'm just here to announce that we'll have our own comic coming out soon called Stupendous Man.
Uh-huh. Or Superior Guy.
That's even better.
Superior Guy.
Well, I'll tell you, give you guys a little heads up on something. Zorro, The Curse of Capistrano, that is public domain. But good luck making your own Zorro book without being sued through the nose over it.
By who?
The creator, the owners of Zorro, Zorro, because like The Curse of Capistrano, it is considered public domain. I'm like, you could go out there and copy everything from Project Gutenberg and publish it yourselves, put it under Superhero Speaks Publishing, and you can republish it. Nobody can do anything about it because it's public domain. However, if you decide, hey, I'm going to continue on with the story of Zorro based on this character, the current owners of Zorro Incorporated, I guarantee you, will come after you.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
The lovely actually world of copyright.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, it protects it. Remember, it protects us.
Yeah. Yes. Well, that's true. That is true. It protects guys like you. People can copy this and distribute it as much as they want. We don't care.
Yeah.
Now, if you guys don't mind, before we wrap it up tonight, I actually have a couple announcements related to the podcast.
I'm being fired? Oh, sorry.
No. And we don't normally like to do these on interviews, but I you know, this stuff, three things that kind of came up this week, and I kind of want to announce it. So just got a new review, actually, on FlightTightsAndMovieNights.com, which is the home of the FilmWise podcast, which is hosted by Bubba Wheat. People might remember that back in November, I was a guest on the FilmWise podcast. That's a podcast where the host picks a movie he's never seen, and you pick a movie you've never seen, and you talk about it with each other. We talk about each movie. And the movie that he had never seen was Anchorman, and the movie that I had never seen was Catwoman, and God, I had to watch Catwoman to be on the podcast.
Oh, poor gosh. Some prices are just too high to pay.
I know. Go check it out. It's an interesting review. It's not good or bad. Give everyone a quick synopsis here. He does a little infographic related to each podcast that he reviews, and he has like these meters, and apparently we're more on the comedic side than the informative side. We're more obscure than mainstream.
Oh, yeah.
And we talk more about comics than movies. So, you know, and we're spoiler heavy. So
nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. The other thing I want to announce just found out yesterday that we're officially in. We did the Philly Podcast Festival last year. We will be doing it again this year. That will be on August 20th at a great little comic book shop in Philly called Amalgam Comics. They're hosting some of the podcasts this year, and It's not
in a bar this year?
No, we could have done either. We could have gone back to Tattooed Mom or Amalgam Comics. I figured that's a little bit more suited for our podcast. This is being in the comic.
Wait. Shop. Isn't this from the same guy who snuck a flask into Philadelphia Comic Con?
Yeah, it just means this year I need two.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, I'm like, there are flasks. You could have those. That'd be really funny. You get like one of those, like when I was talking about earlier, one of those big, thick DC Comics collections of like reprints, like hollow that out and like,
oh,
put,
God,
like,
you're
a bottle,
giving me ideas.
You, like, put like a small bottle of whiskey in there or something.
Well, I'm sure all the coffee he drinks on that day will be Irish.
Well, the problem is that the bartenders won't do my personal mix of, what is it? Bailey's and pepper. What is it? Butterscotch schnapps, half and half, and Hershey's cream liqueur. God.
You need Golly.
I just lost a tooth.
Okay. Okay, miss. Anyway. And we will have a guest again this year. More about that when we find out who the guest is going to be. And on a final note, after we say goodbye this week, a fan of ours reached out to us earlier this week.
Oh, yeah. I saw this. This is cool.
He's a independent musician. He goes by the name Block, and he created a I guess it's a rap song about about Suicide Squad, and it's called Here Come the Villains.
Oh, glory.
So you'll hear that right at after the end of this podcast. So he shared it with us. We're going to share it with all of you.
Very cool.
So that's all my crap. Okay.
Now I feel like I didn't come dressed for the party. I gotta like show up with theme music. Ah,
I do my own. So,
all right, let's hear it.
I knew that was.
I'm your only friend. I'm not your only friend.
Oh God, no, 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 no.
But I'm not actually your friend.
What is that? That's the intro for was it the
Abridged?
No, it's the Abridged series. Yu-Gi-Oh! The Abridged series.
No. It's They Might Be Giants.
I'm sorry, I only relate to things as they relate to anime, so it's just...
Gotcha. Well, I'll tell you this, I don't think I've seen a single episode of They Might Be Giants with tentacles and naked Asian women, so I
that's
apologize.
Hentai, not
there you go.
Like, there's a difference.
There's completely a difference. We could have a whole podcast just of me explaining the difference.
Well, yes, but if you look at the cover for Apollo 18, there are giant tentacles on there.
Well, we can add that to our discussion when you come back later to talk about the other stuff you need to come your announcements and everything. That'll just be the cool film.
So I'm going to ask it anyway. It's the question we always like to wrap up on. And I'll start with Don. How do you measure success?
I measure success. You know what? I'm still learning.
Probably an honest answer, man.
Yep. I am still learning because my definition changes as I change. What I thought of success 20 years ago is not what I would think of success now. And probably right. What I think of success now is not what I will think of success in a year, let alone 2 years. But I will say this, at the risk of being really, really silly about this, I'm proud of the fact I've been married to the same woman for the last 14 years. And I'm more in love with her now than I was back when we got married in 2002.
Is she in the room listening?
No, not at all. And I will admit, she was the one I was whispering to earlier. So it's a big deal for me. Marriage is a big deal for me. So, So again, I'm sorry. I don't want to sound like I'm being silly and just completely bringing this whole thing to a screaming halt and just going, oh, Lord, this just turned into Count Schmaltzala. So.
For me, success is basically, you know what? It starts with little steps, and as long as you can keep making steps to doing the stuff that you want to do, you're heading towards it. And it's not exactly about one final moment or one final thing. It's just about building up on top of stuff and looking back and seeing that you built a legacy instead of a tomb when you died.
Cool. Good answer. And the reason, you know, and it's funny because we've asked that question of people who've been on multiple times. Because sometimes, like you said, Don, the answer changes. And that's the point, I think, of asking that question, Seuss. Don't worry about sounding schmaltzy because, you know, we're all a little schmaltzy inside.
Crap, dude. Now I got to go listen to the last time I was on the podcast to find out what I said last time.
I think James said he's like, it's just basically, you remember that scene in the DuckTales cartoon when Uncle Scrooge jumps into that big pile of money? Yeah, that's success there. That's what James said the last time.
Wait a minute. I think DuckTales did come up.
Hold on. Yeah, it did come up, but it didn't come up in that context.
That's weird.
Yeah, it came up there, and it went, I think it was also pirate midget wrestling came up at 1.2.
Yeah, well, you know.
Oh, that would be great.
Can't have a conversation without talking about pirate midget wrestling.
There you go.
That would actually be really funny. It's like, turns out, what is your definition of success? Winning the pirate wrestling midget title.
And that's where we add the podcast, because we're never going to top that. It's
yes.
Cool. Well, guys, thanks for coming on and doing this. As always, boys and girls, don't let your cape be caught in the door. Now stick around and listen to Block. Here come the villains.
Super Fast Squad. It's a thin line between good and evil. Those lines blur, we all become equal. You got like, but the devil feeds you. Done hurt people in the world needs you. See a hero rises from a dark past. Still a killer up under that mask. Do what it takes to complete the task. Might leave the scene full of body bags. Humanity bless hope. Tell me this a joke.
Nope.
Dysfunctional delinquents. Now let's see how this one goes. A bunch of goons on a mission. Down the ride. Some might say this right here is suicide. I got some villains and they down the ride. But they might be the heroes tonight. Once a killer, now they saving lives. Say hello. A double cross backstab. This could be maybe. Eyes open, third eye. Stay on the look, cause these anti-heroes won't play this one by the book. Who you call when it pop off? Just holler squad for the drop off. Mess around, knock your top off. Red hot like hot sauce. Dancing with the devil may be the cause. Won't take a loss, slaughter all. Shoot first, talk later. There ain't no draw. I got some villains and they down the ride. They might be the heroes tonight. Once a killer, now they saving lives. Say hello to the bad guy. I got some villains and they down the ride. But they might be the heroes tonight. Once a killer, now they saving lives. Say hello to the bad guys.